Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Trish reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Tuesday, May 19th, 2020. The first story is about education. Trustees' vote ensures they approve TEA waivers. Board says it's important that members make decisions. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Midland ISD trustees unanimously voted Monday night to not provide the district's superintendent authority to seek Texas Education Agency waivers without the board's approval. Board members said there was a confusion over the way the district rolled out this agenda item, which would have granted authority to the superintendent to pursue any necessary waivers without board action in an effort to maintain efficient district operations. Riddick said published reports, or at least a report headline, helped exacerbate the confusion. Ultimately, board members, including Rick Davis, John Trichetti III, and Brian Murray, said it was better to err on the side of showing they were making decisions and attempting to get out in front of issues. They also said there are opportunities to show the community that issues such as the superintendent wanting to seek certain waivers were benign. Davis said if the board's decision Monday means more meetings, even special meetings, then that is what the board would do. Earlier in the day, responding to comments from the public, the Midland ISD Communications Office sent the Reporter-Telegram answers to questions about the agenda item. The Communications Office said the reason district staff recommended passage was the coronavirus pandemic and not knowing the types of closures or restrictions that will be in place in the future. There could be instances in which the district expected to be able to meet a TEA requirement, but due to new COVID restrictions put in place, the district is no longer able to meet the requirement. It was stated in the MISD email. At that time, it may be necessary, or at least in the best interest of the district, to submit its application for a waiver as soon as possible rather than having to wait to schedule a board meeting and get board approval. The district will still seek board approval for waiver request when appropriate, as we are doing in item 6 of the board agenda. The communications office didn't offer much information about the type of waivers district staff were talking about. It wasn't until Murray read the specific 8 waivers during the meeting that the information was made public. Staff had communicated with district leaders about those specific waivers earlier in the day. The agenda packet also didn't provide much information on this item. The waivers we will be requesting this year are due to COVID-19 closures. The closures have made it difficult or impossible for the district to complete certain TEA requirements in a timely manner. An email from the Midland ISD Communications Office stated early Monday afternoon. For example, inventory of instructional materials, 19 TAC 66.107A, requires the district to conduct an annual physical inventory of all currently adopted instructional materials that have been requisitioned by and delivered to the district. The results of the inventory shall be recorded in the district's files. The TEA has stated that if a district or charter school did not complete the inventory before school buildings were closed, the school district or charter should request a waiver of the requirement from the commissioner. This is not a problem unique to MISD. Most school districts across the state will be applying for certain waivers due to this unprecedented situation. A couple of people spoke during the public comment period. Matt Galindo said that many people in the minority community worked hard over the years to guarantee single-member districts, and he wanted elected officials to make decisions. Coronavirus, MMH. Midland Fire Department will conduct testing at nursing homes by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. In response to Governor Greg Abbott's mandate that residents and staff at all nursing homes be tested for the coronavirus, the Midland Fire Department will soon begin testing at local facilities, Midland Memorial Hospital CEO Russell Myers said Monday. Abbott's office asked fire departments statewide to aid with testing, Myers said. He said the hospital will be working with MFD to provide necessary training and develop a plan of action for those who test positive. One of the key concerns that we have, which we will continue to emphasize throughout this process, is that we test large numbers of nursing home residents as well as staff members, that we do have a very clear plan for what to do with the patients who come up positive. If we test several hundred people in the community, the chances are very good that some of them will be positive. He said they expect any positives to be either people who've had the virus but are asymptomatic, or people who are experiencing mild symptoms. Those patients could self-isolate at the affected nursing homes, Meyer said, as long as those cases can be managed in those nursing homes. That's what we want to happen. It is not a good scenario for the hospital to be inundated with new patients who don't need us, who are asymptomatic, or who have minor symptoms who could be managed at home. More than 30 residents from the Midland Medical Lodge were transferred to the hospital 2 weeks ago after testing positive. Chief Medical Officer Dr. Larry Wilson said at the time that those residents were transferred because the Texas Health and Human Services Department was determined that the lodge was not properly isolating the residents. 16 of those residents from Midland Medical Lodge who are now asymptomatic were transferred back to the facility after the HHSC provided additional infection control training to lodge staff, Myers said Monday. Myers said the hospital and the fire department do not yet have a timeline for beginning testing at area nursing homes, in part because the fire department has not received their order of testing swabs. He said Midland Memorial will provide an update later this week on the plan for testing that subset of the population. We will have more conversations in the next day or two that will lay out not only what the fire department needs, but also how best to interact with nursing homes and how to make sure they are not only prepared for the mass testing that we're talking about, but also that they have a plan for how to deal with the results of the testing. If they have a lot of negative tests, that's great. And if they have a lot of positive tests that we haven't seen today, we will need to be sure that we've all agreed on what the plan is for how they are going to manage positive results. State. Texas continues swift reopening, including return of sports, by Jim Fortuno from the Associated Press. Austin. Republican Governor Greg Abbott gave permission Monday to reopen practically every facet of daily life in Texas, including bars and child daycare centers, lifting most full lockdown orders as the state continues one of the nation's swiftest reboots from coronavirus restrictions. Abbott's sweeping new orders, which he described as a second phase in Texas's reopening, allows zoos and bowling alleys to resume business and lets restaurants and retailers expand the number of customers by the end of the week. They also set up the return of some professional sports, summer camps, and summer school by June. Abbott said social distancing measures must still be in place, such as limits on customers, and there are no fans at sports events. Theme parks, however, remain closed. The move pushes one of the world's largest economies towards getting back to business as usual, even while the state has seen record numbers of daily new coronavirus cases and deaths. But Abbott has emphasized hospitalization rates have remained flat and infection rates that have dropped even after Texas began lifting stay-at-home orders on May 1st. We have seen no evidence or signs that raise any concerns about a possibility of re-entrenchment in Texas, said Abbott. Abbott did keep broad restrictions in two parts of Texas that are struggling with a surge of new cases, El Paso and Amarillo, for an additional week. He said the delay would give surge teams more time to get the flare-up of new cases under control. Abbott said he can further push Texas open because the state has boosted daily testing and has seen a drop in the percentage of new cases. That infection rate was as high as 13% in mid-April and has dropped under 5% in recent days, according to state health officials. Abbott also said the state has good hospital capacity and personal protective equipment to handle any dramatic increase in cases. Under Abbott's order, child care facilities can remain can reopen immediately. Restaurants will be able to operate at 50% capacity on Friday, an increase from the current 25%, and bars, which had remained closed, to open at 25%. Bowling alleys will be allowed to open at 25%. By June, youth sports and other camps will be allowed to open. Professional sports, including auto racing, golf, softball, and tennis leagues, can apply with the state to host events without spectators. Theme parks are still being evaluated, Abbott said. Schools, which had been closed for the rest of the spring semester, can make plans to reopen for summer school with social distancing guidelines for in-person instruction. Universities can also reopen campus for the summer with similar guidelines. The order did not mention planning for college sports. Democrats, including the mayors of several of the state's largest cities, have criticized the plan as moving too fast and too soon. The people in the city of Houston, we want things to open up, and we want the economy to open up. We want people back on their jobs, said Mayor Sylvester Turner, a Democrat. I probably would choose a different pace than what he has chosen. My only hope and prayer is that several weeks from now, we are not going to see a spike occur. Few states have moved faster to reopen than Texas, where Abbott has warned that the numbers of new cases would rise as the state reopened, and that has borne out. A 9-day streak of at least 1,000 new daily cases that ended Sunday saw the 1-day infection rate hit a record high of 1,801 on Saturday. The 110 deaths over last Thursday and Friday was easily the highest 2-day fatality rate since the virus was first detected in the state. The state reported 909 new cases Monday in about 30,000 new tests. 11 new deaths were the lowest in a single day since March 31st, when there were 4. Mondays have typically been when the fewest new cases are reported. State officials said the surge in new infections came after 700 cases were reported in the Amarillo area, where Texas has sent a response team to contain the growing spread at meatpacking plants. When we increase testing in hotspots, the number of people testing positive is going to spike. We will be prepared to deal with spikes. Local briefs from staff reports. City, number of coronavirus cases up to 122. The City of Midland Health Department is currently conducting its investigation on 2 new confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Midland County, bringing the overall case count to 122. The 121st confirmed case is a male in his 30s who was tested by a private provider. He is self-isolating at home. The source of exposure is travel-related within the United States. The 122nd confirmed case is a female in her 50s who was tested by a private provider. She is self-isolating at home. The source of exposure is community acquired. The health department will continue to monitor the individuals in accordance with the CDC. DPS. Midland teen dies in pickup pedestrian crash. A Midland teen died early Monday morning in a pickup pedestrian crash in West Odessa, according to a press release from the Texas Department of Public Safety. Reyna Rodriguez, 16, was walking in the center of Knox Avenue, 7 miles west of Odessa. An Odessa teen was driving a Dodge Ram southbound on Knox Avenue and hit Rodriguez, according to the release. She died at the scene and no other injuries were reported. Troopers responded to the wreck at 12:30 a.m. Monday. The crash is still under investigation. MCH Clinic employee test positive. 6 new cases confirmed. By J.C. Lewis. Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said an employee tested positive at an MCH Family Health Clinic on West University Boulevard. She was asymptomatic, and the last day she worked at the clinic was Thursday. Timmons said they will be contacting the 49 patients she was in contact with that day. She was tested after being notified through contact tracing that her relative had tested positive, Timmons said. She was wearing a medical and cloth mask while in contact with patients. Staff members who she worked with also will be monitored. Ector County confirmed 6 more positive cases of coronavirus on Monday, making their total 115. There are 3 probable cases at this time. ECHD reported that 79 people have recovered. There have been 1,834 tests taken with 1,603 negative results and 116 pending results. ECHD has contacted 1,382 people during contact tracing. The drive-thru at the Ector County Coliseum confirmed one more case Monday, making its total 12 positive cases of the 138 tests done. 115 are negative and 11 are pending. In Ector County, 293 people have called the triage center for testing. MCH System President and CEO Russell Tippin said MCH has received 62 positive tests and they have tested 978. MCH has not treated a positive patient or patient under investigation for 15 days. They have no positive patients or patients under investigation in the hospital. They have received 876 negative results and 40 are pending. MCH Mission Fitness opened Monday. Odessa Regional Medical Center President and CEO Stacy Brown said ORMC has tested 363 with 15 positives. The hospital has received 343 negative and 5 tests are pending. ORMC is treating one positive coronavirus patient who was tested elsewhere. The patient arrived at ORMC on Monday. MFHS principal to assume principal post at LHS. New principals are also named for Bush and Henderson, from staff reports. Three Midland ISD campuses will have new principals effective July 1st. Midland freshman high school principal Shannon Torres will be the new principal at Lee High School. Long Elementary assistant principal Rebecca McCright will be the next principal at Bush Elementary. Julie Barassa, the assistant principal at Bush, will be the new principal at Henderson Elementary. Torres has been the MFHS principal since 2016. The school was honored as MISD's Campus of the Year in 2018. Torres has consistently met or exceeded board goals under Lone Star governance and has served on the state board of directors for the Texas Association of Secondary School Principals, according to a press release from MISD. She has served the Midland freshman campus and school community at a very high level, and I expect she will continue her career at Lee High School at that same high level, said Jeff Horner, Executive Director of Secondary Education, in a statement. After graduating from Texas Tech, Torres began teaching in Amarillo, where she quickly rose to the role of assistant principal at Tascosa High School. She came to Midland in 2013 as assistant principal of Midland High. Midland ISD has been a great place for me to grow and learn, and I look forward to leading Lee, said Torres, who replaces Stan Van Hooser, the new executive director of state and federal programs for MISD. McWright graduated from Angelo State University and began teaching in MISD in 1997. After 5 years in Midland, she taught in Kerrville for 14 years and returned to MISD in 2016. She was a current curriculum specialist at South Elementary for 2 years and is completing her second year at Long, where she was recently named the Region 18 Assistant Principal of the Year. Barraza, a West Texas native, graduated from Sul Ross State and began teaching at MISD in 2002 and then taught at Valentine ISD for 1 year. When she returned to Midland, Barraza worked as a teacher and reading interventionist before becoming an assistant principal in 2013. Elementary Executive Director Nancy Parker said, McWright and Barassa have served students here in Midland and shown leadership in doing so. I look forward to seeing them help our students excel in their new roles. 16 Midland Medical Lodge residents transferred back to facility, by Caitlin Randall. Midland Memorial Hospital has transferred 16 Midland Medical Lodge residents back to the nursing home because they have either recovered from the coronavirus or are asymptomatic, CEO Russell Meyer said Monday. More than 30 residents from the lodge were transferred to the hospital's COVID-19 units 2 weeks ago after the Texas Health and Human Services Rapid Response Team became involved with controlling the outbreak at that facility. Meyer said during Monday's press briefing that the residents who are returning to the lodge are asymptomatic. He said some have recovered from COVID-19 and some never had symptoms. There are currently 3 residents of the nursing home in the critical care unit and 12 residents in the regular COVID-19 unit, Meyer said. We are very pleased and want to say thanks to the cooperative efforts of the state strike force, the Midland Health Department, and the leadership at Midland Medical Lodge to get those asymptomatic patients back to their homes. They've worked with us very well and will continue to do so until we can get all those patients returned to their homes. Planning and Zoning denies zone change for self-storage facility by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Members of the Planning and Zoning Commission debated about an hour on a request for a zone change at Holiday Hill Road, north of Mockingbird Lane. In the end, the commissioners voted to deny the request. The request by KW Commercial Investment Advisors for a zone change from Agriculture Estate District and PD Planned District for a housing development to C Commercial District on 5 acres of a lot in Green Hill Terrace was to allow construction of a 90,123-foot self-storage facility. The facility would have 11 buildings and a total of 595 storage units. John Owens told the commissioners the project would make an ideal buffer for the residences in Green Hill Terrace because it would be low impact and low traffic, low sound, and low light. It would also solve several issues. Ensuring green space and a retention pond on the northeast corner of the property would address water runoff issues. He said that since 1995, 17 self-storage facilities have been built in Midland with a total appraised value of more than $32 million. David Poster, owner of Discount Storage and Affordable Storage, echoed Owen's comment that it would be a buffer between residents and commercial development in the commercial zones to the south and west. I understand residents have been looking at a vacant lot. They're afraid of change. However, this property will change into a commercial lot. There's no way it's going to be residential. It may not be now. It may be 5 or 10 years from now. Poster said the facility will have concrete walls, non-intrusive lighting, and fewer people in 1 month than in 1 hour at Chick-fil-A. He promised additional landscaping, and because it would surround the Green Hill Terrace community pool, the residents could pick out the brick for the fencing that would be around the pool. Rodney Roberts told the commissioners he was delighted to hear the proposal was for a self-storage facility as opposed to a convenience store and office retail space that had been considered in 2012 when the land was zoned commercial. Those residents using the community pool park on his property, he said, and they could instead use the self-storage facility's parking lot as the property owner would deed over a strip of land for access as long as he could use it in case of emergency. Some neighboring residents, however, were not convinced. Justin Jones said he and his wife live across from what would be the water retention area. This was planned as agricultural estate for a reason. Green Hill Terrace is a legacy area. Introducing the storage facility reduces our quality of life. The open space serves as a focal point for the neighborhood, and we're proud of our pool. There's a long history with the pool, which is lovingly maintained and watched over by the residents. Commercial development, especially this one, would take away from open space and surround our pool with development and introduce people into the neighborhood who don't belong there. Nancy Peterson, another resident, also focused her opposition on Midland's need for more green space and recreational space, and how the storage facility would take away green space. The people that live in these agricultural estate homes make Midland their home. They're not here temporarily, and they're not going to pick up and leave. They want this to be home base. Commissioner Reggie Lawrence, who moved to deny the request, said he's been on both sides of the fence, having supported the controversial apartment complex at Midland Drive and Andrews Highway. I don't disagree with you. There may be a commercial development at some point. My idea is I understand the residents that have voiced their opinion in opposition, and I do agree, as Troy Hunt said, it would be a difficult piece of property to develop. I can see some possibilities, hiking trails, and changing the way the land is structured, and that's not for us to decide or discuss. He said he likes change and appreciates change. I don't see any in this case. Though he voted to deny the request, Commission Chair Josh Sparks pointed out that if the storage facility falls through, some other commercial development from a McDonald's to a bar could then come in. In other action, commissioners approved a residential replat of a 7.85-acre portion of a lot at Beechwood Street and Chukar Lane, and two lots at 1308 and 1310 South K Street to change configuration of lot lines.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, May 19th, 2020. Opinion page. Guest view. Pandemic is time to seriously consider year-round schools. Every few years or so, there's a smart push in many Texas districts toward year-round schools. Students lose so much during the summer months that having kids start the year earlier and end later is a way to close learning gaps. And just as soon as it looks like more districts will give it a try, the efforts fade away under the weight of the big challenges that change brings. But if ever there was a time to seriously consider a year-round calendar, the chaos and disruptions caused by the coronavirus make it a viable option. The Texas Education Agency understands this pandemic is not over and is rightly providing guidance on ways districts might overcome the plan for the disruptions for the next school year. We say extending the school year while working in longer, more frequent breaks to account for spikes in this virus and to make more sure students don't fall behind is a smart idea. We realize that this would be an extraordinary adjustment for Texas school districts and parents who have generally been under the same schedule for years. Child care and vacations are planned around the usual school holidays and long summer breaks. School boards would have to approve, and it's sound advice from the TEA to get parent buy-in and input to address concerns. But COVID-19 has changed education as we've known it. Millions of students have been out of school buildings and on distance learning since March. Educators tell us they're grappling with contingencies for staggered schedules next year, with some combination of in-classroom and a continuation of distance learning. What most agree on is that despite their best efforts, thousands of kids, particularly those already struggling, have fallen way behind. TEA research shows that some of them could start next year a full year behind. That's why TEA's guidelines on moving to an intersessional calendar make sense. Here's what the changes might look like. The school year could start before mid-August and extend into June. 6 weeks of breaks would be dispersed throughout the year, adding additional days to Thanksgiving, winter, and spring breaks. We like this option because it gives districts an opportunity to account for interruptions because of possible spikes of COVID-19, and it allows the use of that time for remediation if there's no resurgence. Districts would also have a chance for a more robust distance learning experience to ensure that actual learning is taking place. And shortening the summer vacation could reduce the summer learning slide students already face. Those would be big wins in our view. What's more, the TEA pointed out that the Big School Finance Bill, HB3, passed last session already allows for up to 30 additional days to be added to the calendars for elementary students to be used for remedial or enrichment instruction. We know most school boards already have approved calendars for the 2020-21 school year. But that was before this virus hit us full steam. We've applauded trustees, administrators, and teachers across the state for their Herculean effort to push learning online. They've had to make adjustments fast because it's been difficult to predict what this virus will do. Change is inevitable for next year, too, because nothing is business as usual anymore. As districts continue to grapple with how best to keep kids learning and safe amid this continued uncertainty, we urge them to look anew at the positive benefits of year-round calendars. It's a good option to allow them to do both. From the Dallas Morning News.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, May 19, 2020. Junior League aids teen girls. Junior League of Midland is continuing its mission during coronavirus. In its effort to provide comfort to teen girls across the city, the nonprofit has created 200 home relief bags and an extra 100 pink pantry kits that will be available for pickup this week at Lee and Midland Freshman High Schools and next week at Midland ISD's summer meal sites. The home relief bags contain feminine hygiene supplies, snacks, and craft supplies. The pink pantry kits contain personal hygiene and feminine hygiene supplies. Pink Pantry is a junior league program at the county secondary schools. Boxes with these supplies are located at each school, according to the league. For more information about the league's mentoring programs or its response to the COVID-19 pandemic, call 682-4732, email office@jlmidland.org, or visit www.jlmidland.org. MISD summer meal schedule begins May 26. Midland ISD summer meal schedule goes into effect on May 26. Breakfast and lunch meals will be available for grab and go 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., Monday through Friday at 11 locations, according to a press release from the district. Meals are available for any child 18 or under, or those who receive services from school. The locations are Bonham, Bowie, Bunch, Burnett, DeZavala, Rusk, Santa Rita, South, and Yarborough Elementary Schools, Fire Station No. 4, and Twin Oaks Mobile Home Park. MISD has served more than 405,000 meals during the COVID-19-related closure of schools, Victoria Beck, Director of Child Nutrition Services, said. Daily menus are available at MidlandISD.net under Child Nutrition Services. Shell donates gas cards to Senior Life. Shell Exploration and Production Company on Monday presented Senior Life Midland with Shell gas cards valued at $2,500, according to a press release from the nonprofit. The cards will be used as the agency continues to provide services for Midland's elderly and homebound residents during the coronavirus pandemic. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, May 19, the 140th day of 2020. There are 226 days left in the year. On this date, in 1913, California Governor Hiram Johnson signed the Webb-Hartley Law prohibiting aliens ineligible to citizenship from owning farmland, a measure targeting Asian immigrants, particularly Japanese. In 1921, Congress passed and President Warren G. Harding signed the Emergency Quota Act, which established national quotas for immigrants. In 1967, the Soviet Union ratified a treaty with the United States and Britain, banning nuclear and other weapons from outer space, as well as celestial bodies such as the moon. The treaty entered into force in October 1967.
Obituaries for May 19th, 2020. Esperanza Alamon Maldonado, 72, of Midland, died on Friday, May 15th, 2020. She was born on November 13th, 1947, in Durango, Mexico. She is survived by four sons, Frederico Maldonado, Antonio Maldonado, Cesar Maldonado, and Jonathan Chavarria. Four daughters, Maria Amalia Carrasco, Blanca Maldonado, Sandra Maldonado, and Belinda Maldonado, all of Midland, Texas. And granddaughters and grandsons whom she raised as her own, Bianca Maldonado, Otilia Maldonado, Valentina Sands, and Frederico Maldonado III. She is also survived by her brothers, Abel Alamon and Felipe Alamon of Midland. Sisters, Aurora Salazar of Durango, Mexico, Gloria Bermudez, Maria de Jesus Santos, Socorro Reyes, Gerarda Enriquez, and Maria Rayo Alamon, all of Midland. Funeral Mass is set for Tuesday, May 19th, 2020, at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences can be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Death notices. Amanda Esquivel, 43, of Midland, passed away May 16, 2020. Viewing will be Thursday, May 21st, 2020, from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, May 22nd, 2020, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Gary Collier, 72, of Midland, passed away Sunday, May 17th. Graveside services will be held at 3 p.m. Wednesday, May 20th, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. John Edward Johnson, 80, of Midland, passed away May 16th, 2020. A memorial service will be held on Thursday, May 21st, 2020, at 2 p.m. at First Southern Baptist Church in Gardendale. Derek Looney will officiate, and arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery and Funeral Home. Kevin Eduardo Campos, 16, of Midland, Texas, passed away Sunday, May 17th. The viewing will be Tuesday, May 19th, from 12 to 9 p.m., at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. A funeral service will take place Wednesday, May 20th at 2 p.m., also at Heavenly Gate Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his parents, Lisbeth Campos Rodriguez and Hugh Campos Martinez, sisters, Alejandra Campos and Emily Campos, a brother, Hugo Isaac Campos, grandparents, Ricardo Campos, Anita Martinez, and Josefina Garcia. Louis W. Crozier, 64, of Midland, passed away Friday, May 15th. A viewing will be held from 8 to 9, Wednesday, May 20th, 2020, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A graveside service will be held at 9 a.m. Thursday, May 21st, at Rest Haven Memorial Park.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Tuesday, May 19th. More businesses open and cases rise, by Michael Merlot. As gyms, manufacturing facilities, and offices opened at 25% capacity, Monday, trainers and fitness folks showed excitement being able to get back to work and back to working out. Flex 24 Fitness Assistant Manager Jill Slatton, 48, said her and other employees were just excited to be out of the house. And although Flex 24 is being conservative while reopening, keeping some machines shut down and waiting to start fitness classes, she estimated around 150 people visited the gym Monday morning. Fitness 24 LLC, like other gyms, shut down to the public for about a month and a half because of the coronavirus pandemic. And in that time, Slatton said employees deep-cleaned equipment and high-touch surfaces. Some of the fitness class restrictions depend on the attendance in the gyms as well as the fluidity of Governor Greg Abbott's orders in the coming weeks, Slatton said. We've got signs on certain machines that people can't use it. Use it keeps the social distancing. We've got some of the machines completely turned off, she said. That's different to how we've got things set up to where we're trying to keep people spaced out, apart from each other. She said she's had quite a few phone calls of excited customers asking if they can come into the gym and added that working out is a number one way to relieve stress, and there's so many people without jobs or going through all of this, and this is the place they need to be. People are ready, she said. They're wanting to get back in here and get their fitness on, and we're going to have a bunch of really sore people walking around this week, she said. While gyms around the U.S. opened illegally in defiance of restrictive orders, which some claim unconstitutionally kept them from gaining revenue causing them to close, Slatton said that the owner of Flex 24 said that closing was a big financial hit, and it's going to take some time to recover. It's been tough, Slatton said. It gave us a big kick in the gut, but we're going to be fine. We'll come back from it. As the next phase of reopening gains traction in the state opening businesses previously closed, Texas has seen 1,801 new COVID-19 cases on Saturday, which the Houston Chronicle reports is the biggest single-day jump in cases since the beginning of the pandemic. The Houston Chronicle detailed that the jump is mostly due to more than 700 new cases in Amarillo. Ector County has reported 9 new cases since last Friday, with 115 total positive cases, 79 of those recovered, 4 deaths, 32 cases currently active, and 116 pending. Out of 293 calls to the Ector County Coliseum drive-thru testing, 138 have been tested and 12 tested positive. During Monday's Zoom hospital news briefing, Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin said that out of 978 total tests, 62 have been positive, 876 negative, and no one positive or under investigation is in the hospital. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that over the weekend, an employee at the West University Family Clinic tested positive for the virus and was asymptomatic. Her last day at work was on May 14th, and MCH is trying to call all of the 49 patients she had come into contact with and will monitor employees who worked with her. Out of 363 tests, Odessa Regional Medical Center reported 15 positives, 343 negative, 5 pending, and 1 COVID-19 positive patient in the hospital, with hopes of getting that patient remdesivir from MCH. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan discussed how the Abbott rapid tests have been found to produce false negatives. Governor Abbott also opened other businesses Monday, including child care services, massage and personal care services, youth clubs, activities, and tattoo parlors. Abbott also announced that other businesses can open Friday, including bars, bowling alleys, bingo halls, aquariums, natural caverns, rodeos, and other equestrian events limited to 25% capacity. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases 115, Ector County negative 1,603 out of 1,834 tested, with 116 pending, 4 deaths. Midland County 122 confirmed out of 2,348 tested, 12 deaths. Texas 48,693 confirmed, with 723,013 tested. Total Texas deaths, 1,347. U.S. cases, 1,549,586 total confirmed and 91,964 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us. Live stream graduations. Graduation ceremonies for Ector County ISD's Class of 2020 will be virtual this year, but they will contain some of the same elements students would have experienced in a face-to-face event. Dates for the graduations are Friday and Saturday, and they will be broadcast at the same time they would actually have been held, Superintendent Scott Murray said. Stream. Permian is on Friday and Odessa High School is Saturday. The one for Odessa Collegiate Academy is at 10 a.m. Friday. The one for OC Techs is at noon Friday. George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa is at 2 p.m. Friday. And PHS is at 8:30 p.m. Friday. Odessa High School's graduation will be at 8:30 p.m. Saturday. Virtual Eid Celebration Set. This is typically the time of year that end-of-year celebrations take place within Ector County ISD and throughout the state. The yearly Eid celebration is no exception, but this year the event will be virtual and broadcast on the CW at 1 p.m. today. It will also be shown on a YouTube channel District AVID Director Amy Anderson said. AVID stands for Advancement Via Individual Determination. AVID's systemic approach is designed to support students and educators as they increase school-wide, district-wide learning and performance. Its mission is to close the achievement gap by preparing all students for college readiness and success in a global society. There are about 2,300 AVID students taking the AVID elective in grades 7 through 12 and 7,489 elementary students. Anderson said that does not include the 450 students served in the Middle School Leadership Coaching Initiative. Anderson said she has been working on the celebration for 3 weeks in partnership with Complex Community Federal Credit Union. Every year, she said, a senior experience is provided for students, and Complex Community hires a company to record, take photos, and create a movie that honors the students. So we thankfully had already done that way back in January. Then I have working on getting everybody's video from everybody's individual workplace or home or whatever. I did have the seniors come in and record again, being very mindful of social distancing and even providing some of the seniors with masks if needed or asked for. My daughter and my mom and one of my mom's friends are making masks, so I just carry masks around for those in need as well. I just had a little area set up and I was 6 feet from them recording, and then they were allowed to take their masks off and record, Anderson said. Several other district officials, such as Superintendent Scott Murray, Community Engagement Specialist Debbie Lieb, and District AVID Coordinator Virginia Hunt, also recorded. On Friday, we put all of those recordings together, and then I did mine live just for the seniors on Friday through a Zoom meeting. Then I recorded all of my parts, and we put it all together, and it should air tomorrow at 1, Anderson said. It's been quite the project, she added. Lieb said virtual celebrations reach a wider audience while allowing staying safe and social distancing. We are shining brightly through collaborative efforts of which I feel privileged to be a part. We all benefit when working unified together for our common goal of doing what is best for students. ECISD provides a solid launching pad for learners to soar toward their dreams, Lieb said in an email. Because the CW spot is on for an hour, Anderson said she is working to upload the entire presentation that includes Lieb and Partners of the Year for AVID that will also be released on Facebook today. There also will be a drawing for a Kindle, and some seniors will receive external hard drives. ECISD celebrates its volunteers and partners. With the coronavirus pandemic, the annual Volunteers and Partners celebration couldn't be held, but the district is still making efforts to recognize them. The district's theme this year has been Big, Bold, Brave. Our theme truly reflects parents and students, our community and school staff working toward achieving the same goal of academic growth for every learner, Community Engagement Specialist Debbie Lieb said in a news release. We faced the unexpected and overcame challenges with grit and determination. The partnership between school, home, community deepened throughout this academic year with unified efforts to continue remote learning together while apart. This week, we celebrate finishing strong for all students and families and the graduation class of 2020, the culmination of hard work and collaboration. We want to express heartfelt appreciation to volunteers and partners who played a key role. In compliance with local restrictions and CDC guidelines, our annual Volunteer and Partner Awards celebration was canceled and replaced with alternative avenues, she added. Lieb said they are working to finalize volunteer hours. Currently, 34,223 are recorded in Volley, VIPS, New Volunteer Records Management System. Even during COVID-19, volunteers stayed engaged by communicating and supporting each other, parents, and school staff by using multiple methods, such as phone, texts, emails, GroupMe, and Zoom, she said. There are 564 volunteers involved in the program. Honorees were mailed a letter and certificate of appreciation, and they are being recognized through multiple platforms. Ector County ISD is honoring the following volunteers and partners. Partners: Access for Success, Ravi Shakamuri and Raghunath Subramanian, ECISD, Avid, Boys and Girls Club, Headley, E.K. Downing Elementary School, Sewell Ford Motor Company, Colin Sewell, ECISD, Career and Technical Education, XTO Energy, Jordan Elementary School, Volunteers Individual Junior Volunteer, Natalie Gayoso from E.K. Downing Elementary School, Individual Adult Volunteers, Greg Connell at E.K. Downing Elementary School, Alan Espina with Avid, Pat Lopez at Burleson Elementary School, Vivian McCaw at Ireland Elementary School, Ted Press at Buse Elementary School. Adult Volunteer Programs, Burleson Elementary School, E.K. Downing Elementary School, Spirit Club of OC Tax. Local News Roundup, Fabian Gutierrez. Two men charged in connection to robbery at gunpoint. Two 22-year-old men were arrested after they reportedly robbed two other men at gunpoint. Peter Anthony Armijo, 22, and Fabian Francisco Gutierrez, 22, were each charged with two counts of aggravated robbery with a deadly weapon, a first-degree felony. Gutierrez was also charged with failure to appear for driving while license invalid, a Class B misdemeanor. The reported robbery happened around 9:27 p.m. Friday, near the area of 8th Street and Highway 80. Officers reportedly made contact with a 23-year-old man and 22-year-old man who stated they had been robbed at gunpoint by two men. Investigation showed both victims were in the 2800 block of East 11th Street when one of the suspects pointed a gun at them and demanded their vehicle and property. Armijo and Gutierrez fled the scene in the victim's black Mercedes-Benz. There were no reports of injuries. During the investigation, the suspects were reportedly identified as Armijo and Gutierrez. OPD located both suspects Saturday at the Parkway Inn, located at 3071 East Highway 80. Armijo and Gutierrez were arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Gutierrez has three bonds totaling $105,000, and Armijo has two bonds totaling $100,000, jail records show. Armijo and Gutierrez were still in custody as of Monday afternoon. Bond set for man and woman charged in fatal shooting of teen. The 21-year-old man and 20-year-old woman who were arrested after they were reportedly involved in the fatal shooting of a 17-year-old man in central Odessa were magistrated Monday morning. Desmond Tuggle, 21, and Destiny Barrera, 20, were each booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Sunday and charged with murder, a first-degree felony. Jail records show that Tuggle and Barrera each have one bond totaling $200,000 and were still in custody as of Monday afternoon. The reported fatal shooting happened around 10:10 p.m. Saturday in the 1100 block of North Jackson Avenue. Officers reportedly found a 17-year-old man with a gunshot wound. OPD spokesperson Corporal Steve LeSueur said during a phone call on Sunday afternoon that the 17-year-old has been identified as Osvaldo Renteria. The 17-year-old was transported to a local hospital, and he was later pronounced dead by medical personnel. Investigation showed Renteria had made contact with the occupants of a black Dodge Nitro, who were later identified as Tuggle and Barrera. The driver of the Dodge Nitro shot the 17-year-old in the upper body before fleeing north on Jackson Avenue at a high rate of speed. During the investigation, the suspects were reportedly identified as Tuggle and Barrera. The investigation continues. Next of kin were notified. DPS. Two pedestrians die in Odessa. A 37-year-old woman and a 16-year-old girl each died in separate vehicle-pedestrian collisions on Sunday and Monday in Ector County. Sunday's fatal collision happened around 6:41 p.m., 5 miles south of Odessa, on U.S. Highway 385. James E. Camo, 20, of Odessa, was reportedly driving a 2003 Chrysler 300 north on U.S. Highway 385 on Sunday. Patricia H. Munoz, 37, of Odessa, was reportedly in the center of the roadway. When Camo saw Munoz in the roadway, he attempted to swerve to avoid the collision, but the Chrysler collided with a pedestrian. Munoz was pronounced dead at Medical Center Hospital. Monday's fatal collision occurred at 12:33 a.m., 7 miles west of Odessa on Knox Avenue. Christian Baeza, 18, of Odessa, was reportedly driving a 2006 Dodge Ram south on Knox Avenue. The pedestrian, identified as 16-year-old Reyna M. Rodriguez of Midland, was walking in the center of the roadway. The Ram collided with Rodriguez. The crash is still under investigation. Rodriguez was reportedly pronounced dead by medical examiner.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.